I'm Kate Remington, and today I'm talking with Jason Graves, who's won many, many awards, including BAFTAs, for his soundtracks that include the Dead Space series, the Tomb Raider reboot from 2013, The Order 1886, and most recently, Far Cry Primal, which is set in the Stone Age in 10,000 BCE, to be exact. And Jason, it's just a thrill to be able to talk with you.
Oh, hey, Kate. Happy to be here and a thrill to speak with you as well.
Well, you know, I guess this is a real example, a great example of kind of being open to whatever opportunities come your way. Because, I mean, did you ever imagine that you'd have the opportunity to, you know, growl like a caveman and decide what a woolly mammoth is going to sound like?
No, never. And the real funny thing is, if I end up speaking to people about pretty much any of these scores, everyone says, oh, well, of course they hired you for that game. And it seems, I think, after the fact, a lot easier to connect the dots than it does beforehand. Because, I mean, sure, sticks and stones and flutes and all that. Hopefully, I think that's the biggest challenge of the composer. It feels like it couldn't be anything but what it is. But going into it with a blank slate, it's always a bit of a challenge to make it seem effortless. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it does. And especially because I know your background as you were a percussion major at the conservatory, and it sounds like you always felt like you were at a little bit of a disadvantage among the piano majors and the string majors. And so
definitely.
Now you're like, okay, guys, you could like open up the throttle a little bit with all the drumming.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's really taken me maybe the last 5 years. So the last 20%, 25% of my career to really appreciate where I come from, as opposed to feeling like it was a limitation. I really learned to mentally embrace it and use it as a tool. And I think any composer or artist should try to do that, because we are the sum of our lives and no one has the same perspective. You know, I have a different musical perspective than you would, or versus another composer who might be working on something. And I think we always lean towards the negative, thinking like, oh, well, I mean, you could say any instrument, you know, I play saxophone and I can't play piano and I wish I could do more with the orchestra or whatever. It all actually informs who you are. And I'm finally at peace with that. I'm a drummer. I mean, you said percussionist and conservatory, and it makes it sound so fancy, and I am classically trained, but really what it comes down to is I'm a drummer. So when you're hearing a lot of this sort of action stuff and things, it's really like a giant drum set playing. It doesn't matter if it's Far Cry or Dead Space or Tomb Raider. The mentality is coming from that of being behind a drum set and playing, even if there's no drums involved. I use the orchestra as a drum set.
Wow. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I can hear that now in these other scores that you mentioned. And one of the things I was going to ask you about is, since so many of your scores have a completely different feel, I mean, Primal doesn't sound anything like The Order 1886, really, but I guess that would be kind of the thread or the part of you that kind of stays consistent from soundtrack to soundtrack.
It's funny, because when I was in Los Angeles a long time ago, first starting my career, we had to put demo reels together on beta tapes. And it was expensive. I mean, to get the beta tape edited and to get all your stuff on there properly, I mean, you're probably looking at $150 or $200 kind of per tape once everything gets done. And then you got to make 10 or 15 of these. And it was an arduous process, and it was a very expensive process. And I went through all of that and got the tapes to my agent. And she called me and was fussing at me, saying that she couldn't send them out to anyone. And I thought, oh no, what did I mess up? They're not playing, or they're blank, or, you know, something terrible. And she said, every piece on here sounds completely different from the other piece. And I was kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? I was kind of thinking that was like my thing, because I love all these different kinds of music. And she said, I can't sell a composer who doesn't have a sound. You need to have a specific sound. Put just orchestra stuff on there, or put just, you know, you playing steel drums or something. You can't have all these different pieces of music, because no one will know what you sound like. And that's sort of a full circle thing. If you say the thread of these scores not really sounding that similar, is it's coming from one guy, I suppose. So I guess my short point is thanks, I think. Yeah, thanks.
It was meant to be a compliment.
Yeah, good.
But, you know, it seems like that's a real advantage with making scores, rating scores for all these different kinds of games set in all these different eras, you know, now tens of thousands of years apart. You know, you have to kind of be able to switch gears quickly, it seems like.
It does, especially sometimes you've got three or four different things going on at the same time. And I'll take a day to work on one project and another day to work on another project. But literally, let me think, what was it? I was doing The Order and was it Evolve, maybe? I think that was it. So a futuristic space monster hunter versus a kind of 18th century, London monster hunter. But the time periods were completely different. So I always try to split everything up by days, and that helps me stay focused and not put modern synths in something from 1886.
Well, is that a thing that helps with writer's block too?
Definitely. Just because it will have been a day or two since I worked on a particular game, and I can come back to it with slightly fresh ears. Although, ironically, in the case of The Order and Evolve, I had to work on both of them every day because they had the same deadline. So I would literally work on The Order in the morning and finish a queue up and send it off to my copyist by noon. Well, just the Sony by noon, they would approve it. Then I'd send it to the copyist, and I'd work on queues for Evolve in the afternoon. And then by dinner time, literally, that queue from The Order that I'd written that morning was printed, all the parts were done, the score was finished, and it was ready to record. So I did that for, it was probably 8 weeks.
Oh my God, that sounds incredibly intense. I was going to ask you how it was that you got through writing five scores last year, and now I know.
It's tough. I mean, it's fun. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But there always seems to be a crunch period they seem to be getting longer, honestly. It used to just be a couple of weeks. But now it does get down to there's a lot of music that needs to get done for these games, and I work by myself. So I don't have I don't even think the word is luxury, because I don't really believe in farming stuff out. But I don't have the ability to hand the music to someone else and have them write it. I feel like if there was someone else who could do what I would do, then they should have hired that other person instead. So I'm still doing it myself, but it's like the Olympics. I mean, I get in this schedule I call the Olympic routine, where, you know, I have three meals a day and I don't drink a lot of coffee and I don't have any alcohol and I go to sleep at like 10 o'clock each night and very regimented. And, you know, by 6 o'clock, I'm finished every day, so I can kind of clear my mind and get a good night's sleep. And then it's up the next morning at 6 a.m. to do some more work, and no nights and weekends. That's how I work normally, but especially during that period. And then, you know, you're looking at 4 or 5 minutes of finished music each day that are getting sent out.
Wow. That's an incredible schedule. I mean, it sounds like the training that Formula One drivers do so that they can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's I've come to that path from kind of going from my 30s into my 40s, because at about 35, I realized that I couldn't stay up all night anymore. And by the time I hit 40, I knew that any time I would try to gain at night or on the weekends, I would lose during my actual productive time during the week, because I'd just be too brain dead. I'd be sitting there staring at the screen and either in a terrible mood because everything sounded awful because I was tired, or just have no thought about anything. And this allows for kind of premium concentrated work, which different people work different ways. That's just what works for me.
I've talked to a few composers who are like really disciplined. I mean, it's a job. It's like, well, like you say, in your case, a 12-hour a day job. But yeah, that way you can really focus on it for those 12 hours and not just, you know, wait for random things to happen.
And that's the key, focus, like quality focus. So it's not how much I'm working, it's how well I'm working.
Well, it seems to have really, really gelled with the music for Primal. I mean, this game, it's amazing, because right off the bat, you realize that you are in a brutal world. I mean, you and your little tribe have to take down a young mammoth, and you just finish with that, and then this saber-toothed tiger rolls up and takes out one of your tribesmen. And all the way through that, there's this really dramatic, really tense drumming. So it really seems like you've just added so much to the world with your music.
Oh, wow. That's a fantastic compliment. Thank you.
Well, it's, you know, I tend to focus on the music more than the gameplay. I get killed a lot, so I have a lot of time, a lot of time to listen to the music. So, you know, if it doesn't add that much to the game, it just turns into a really kind of frustrating experience because you have to hear that piece again. but now, when Ubisoft brought you on board for the project, they already had the world pretty much mapped out and the characteristics and kind of the culture, right? So did you guys work together on what sort of instruments or sounds were going to be part of your soundtrack?
Definitely. There was an initial sort of idea spree for about a month where I just threw everything but the kitchen sink in, you know, anything that would be appropriate for the game, kind of threw it all in about 10 or 15 minutes of music. And just to get a feel, you never really know at the beginning of a project what you're going to end up with. It's sort of, you got to kind of crank through it and look back after 2 or 3 months and see what's been left behind. I don't think most of the time that's what happens with me. So there was that kind of initial sound mining, which was how much stuff can I do with, you know, a giant pair of rocks that normally people would be using to pave their driveway with or something like that. How much can I do with a couple of bushes that I have set up sort of like cymbals in a drum set? Can I do anything with them that just doesn't sound kind of limp and lame and, you know, swishy? Can I actually make them sound aggressive? Because if it couldn't sound aggressive, it wasn't going to be in the game. So there's about a month of that, and then there was another couple of months of working on the specific tribes. So as you know, there are three tribes in the game, mm-hmm. and we really wanted each tribe to have their own sound. And it ended up sort of being delineated through a couple of different types of instruments. There were three different kinds of vocals, there were three different kinds of wind instruments, and then three different kinds of drumming, more or less. So the idea was, even if you don't realize it and you haven't read about any of the music, if you're in an open world and you're walking towards Izula territory, you start hearing some sounds that you immediately associate with the Izula, whether it's a female voice or some sort of a whistly sound or some fast percussion.
Thank you.
And it works on a subliminal level. Same thing with the udam. You start maybe hearing me doing some of that breathing and grunting that you were talking about earlier, or some of those stones being rubbed together. And it has an instant kind of visceral appeal to putting the player in the right mindset that, you know, visually you're just walking across a hill, but you start hearing that music, and you can't play sound effects because they'd be out of context. But music totally works. You play that music, and the player is instantly on edge a little bit, and they start looking like, oh, wait a minute, is there some udam in the woods? I'm not sure. That's what I love about music.
Well, obviously it can be so powerful, and depending on, you can completely change the mood of a scene with different music. And it really kind of works on, as you say, a subliminal level, sort of like, appealing to our primal instincts, because you kind of, as you say, realize without even knowing it that you're heading into different territory. And I really laughed when I read your tweet about how you play a mean bucket of dirt. And so I went back and I listened like really carefully, and I couldn't hear any dirt. So so how did you end up working that into some of the tracks?
So the dirt is you'd have to listen to some of the tracks on the soundtrack that have udam in the title. I'm terrible about remembering track names, and there were 30 something on this particular soundtrack release, so good luck, I'll never be able to do it. But with udam in the title, the really natural sounding ones, they were like these whoosh, whoosh kinds of sounds, sort of, the only way I could really get a good sound out of it was to take my whole hand and just kind of scoop it, sort of rhythmically. And there might even be a little bit of an echo or something on it. But that was how all those natural sounds came about. They were just sounds that I played in a rhythmic fashion. So you don't really associate, oh, that sounds like a bush, that sounds like some dirt, that sounds like a big piece of firewood hitting another big piece of firewood. It just sort of sounds, well, you know, kind of raw and primitive.
No, it absolutely does. And speaking of raw and primitive, tell me about the Aztec death whistle.
Ubisoft, as you mentioned, had already done tons of research on the game. And one of the things that they recommended, and this is what's great about developers, especially in games, if this were a film, you know, the director would have said, oh, we did all this research and I want you to take this Aztec death whistle thing we found and put it throughout the score. It'll be the signature sound. Ubisoft said, they have these cool things called Aztec death whistles, which the Aztec warriors back in the day, they're big, they're small enough to wear as a pendant around their neck. And when they would defeat a tribe, basically when they killed everybody in that tribe, they'd all blow these whistles. And one of them sounds terrifying. It sounds like someone screaming as loud as they can, but their voice is hoarse. And if they're at maybe the other end of a tunnel, it's super, it just has an instant, like, whoa, kind of goosebumpy sound. So I can't imagine 30 or 40 of these being blown in the forest, with the idea that neighboring tribes could hear that and kind of knew that they were next. So it's supposed to inspire fear, and it also is supposed to carry over a long distance. Ubisoft found some great videos and said, we don't want you to buy an Aztec death whistle, but if you could come up with something that has this kind of emotional connection, something that's really scary that we can associate with the Izilla, and that is simple. We don't want big melodies and things like that. And that's when I went, and my first vocal bit was using Maluka, who's a Mexican singer who's incredible. You hear her chanting and screaming her head off in the Izilla stuff. But I felt like I was still missing a wind element, so I actually found a guy in Arizona that makes exact replicas of Aztec death whistles. So I ordered a few, and that was really the icing on the cake. As soon as they showed up, I was thinking, is it really going to sound? Yeah, it does. I blew into it and was like, whoa! So that got used a lot.
Wow. Well, you know, I know your studio is like really super soundproof, but I just have this vision of, you know, you in there with the death whistles and the singer and all the drums and the bones and the neighbors hearing this and say, oh, that Jason, he's just doing another sacrifice.
Yeah, just just some more ritualistic sacrificial music. No big deal.
You have nothing to see here. Have a hard time kind of leaving that behind in the studio. I mean, do you ever, you know, like when you're making dinner or you're walking in the forest, you hear something and it's like, oh man, I gotta go capture that.
Your brain is definitely on all the time. As a composer, as a sound designer, as someone who works with audio, especially after so many years, you can't really turn off the, that's an interesting sound. But as far as work goes, usually I'm fairly regimented, so by the end of the day, I've finished what I needed to finish, and it's easy for me to literally close the door on the studio, close the door mentally. My studio is behind my house in a separate building, and walk into the house. Leaving the studio helps a lot, that I'm not working in the house. But the worst thing is if maybe it's a super big cue, or even at the beginning of Far Cry when I was doing these 3 and 4 minute pieces, and I just didn't have, you know, it's like running a race. I didn't have the stamina to complete it in one day yet because I was still trying to figure out my way around. So it might take me 2 days to do one piece and then forget about it. I'm a zombie the rest of the night because my brain's still in the studio trying to finish that piece. Just like a lot of people can be out in the world and they hear something and their brain starts figuring out, you know, what I could take that sound and I could make it, whatever. It's the blessing and the curse of doing what you love for a living.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got like a few animals running around there too, and I guess you kind of recruited some of them for some of the
definitely
the sounds.
That was, I started with myself, to be fair. I started experimenting. Human trials were first. The opposite of the way everybody else does it. But I love the idea of heartbeats, and I sort of just came up with a stethoscope kind of attached to the end of a sensitive microphone, and my heartbeat ended up being great. And I just thought, well, I wonder what everyone else's would sound like. So we've got some dogs and some birds, and I wanted to get the rabbit, but he would never hold still long enough to be able to record anything. The dogs and the birds would stand still. And there's a video that they did, sort of a behind the scenes of the music, and I brought a few of the birds in and even showed them how I held one of them and put the stethoscope on her chest, and her heart's like da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum. So it ended up being, doesn't even really sound like a heartbeat, but much like the dirt, it's more in a musical context anyway. You're not supposed to think, does that sound like an animal heartbeat? It's just something that doesn't sound like anything specific. And it's fun, you know, it's fun to do. But I've had a lot of people say, is that a fake bird that you're holding with the stethoscope on your hand in the video? Because she sits so still. She just kind of sits there, which made it easy to record her.
Yeah, well, and maybe this isn't the first time that she's been in the studio or helping
you.
Oh,
definitely not. Yeah, I've got a bird sitting right here about 2 feet from me right now. They just hang out. They're great company, and they talk and sing when I'm doing music, and just it's a lot of fun. I've recorded them for other sounds. I've used, like, made their chirps and things into drum sets and done little break beats with bird sounds and all kinds of stuff with the, you know, dog growls. And sure, I mean, they're all over the place, so why not take advantage of it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like free labor. And so,
yep.
You don't have to pay them union dues or anything.
Nope. No union wages, no problems with strikes. It's all good.
Uh-huh. So speaking of growls and animal noises, you kind of had to come up with a sound for the woolly mammoth, too, and the saber-toothed tiger. So how did that all work out?
Well, there were two things I wanted to do with the animals. Now, a lot of this is knee-jerk reactions from me as the composer, just sort of reacting to what Ubisoft brings to me. So things get formulated as we go, because there wasn't a complete picture in the beginning. There never is. If I'm brought on when I like to be brought on, which is early, as opposed to the game being completely finished and them saying, here's a list of what we need, go. I like being able to sort of experience it as it comes online. So Ubisoft came to me about halfway through and said, we're going to have these epic animal hunts, and we want 6 or 7 different pieces of music to go along with them. And it seemed like, it felt like those hunts could use something different besides the little flute that we had used for the Wenja, for your tribe. And that was when I was able to use this ram's horn, literally a ram's horn that my dad brought from me from Africa. And it's got this just inhuman, wild sort of sound. The parts that I chose to use, I didn't play that. I had a friend of mine who's a local musician who plays trombone. He came in and played it. But all the, like, kind of crazy, pitchy sort of things, I used all that stuff. He played a lot of stuff that was very in tune, and he'd do a little scale or something. No, none of that now. We need to keep it animalistic and primal, right? So those are what we used for the hunts, and any of the cues on the soundtrack that have animals in the title, Sabretooth or Mammoth or anything like that, you can hear that horn. And again, very much like the Aztec Death Whistle or Maluka's vocals, it has, I mean, am I right? Like this instantly distinctive sound where it's like, whoa, what's that? Because that's what I thought when I first heard it. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And then when the mammoth, like, comes charging at you, it's terrifying because the music and that sound just, like, really brings it to life. So I, like, jumped out of my skin when I heard it the first time. Actually, I've got a little story about just how powerful the music can be. And actually, it's your music. It's the music that you wrote for the Tomb Raider reboot. in 2013, and I tend to be a pretty cautious player. As I said, I die a lot, so I use cover and I pick off the bad guys, you know, one at a time, and guard her health and all of that. There was this battle that you wrote the music for, and all of a sudden, it's just like my feelings toward fighting in a battle like that just did a 180. All of a sudden, I was feeling like way more aggressive. Lara was right out there in the thick of it, you know, just wailing on these bad guys, and it was such a different feeling, and it was because of the music. The music just really, you know, made me feel way more powerful. So, you know, thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Did you die immediately like I would have, or did you actually?
Well, you know, she was a little more powerful that day, and she was really, really quick with her axe. So, but, you know, I'm wondering, as you're playing a game, have you had that experience too, where all of a sudden everything just like really comes together?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Those are my favorite composite experiences. That's the magic of, I would mostly say film and games are when I really, really enjoy it. But I'm probably 10 times worse a player than you are. So for me, the magic comes more when I'm viewing and not playing, say in some cinematics or something like that. I remember as soon as you asked that question, the opening to BioShock came into my head.
Oh, yeah.
From a game standpoint, because I loved what Gary Scheinman did with the strings and everything when you go underwater and you're floating around, and it's very much a powerful, inseparable kind of experience. So if I ever think of BioShock, I think of that music cue. If I ever hear that music cue, I see the visuals in my head, and that means that someone did something right. Well, a whole bunch of people did something right, because you've got that sort of inseparable experience.
Yeah, and that's what it boils down to. And I just didn't know if, you know, since you're right in the thick of it and you kind of know how the sausage is made and you know the little tricks for getting, you know, emotion, the right emotion out of music, if it was, you know, kind of, if it had lost its magic, I guess, but apparently not. So.
No, definitely not. If I had to write the same cue every day, maybe, but every day, even working on the same game, every cue is different, and the intent of every cue is different, and there's so many shades of gray, especially with games. It's not just combat music. It's, well, do we want the player to feel scared, like Dead Space, for example, where the music's just supposed to terrify them? Do we want the player to feel empowered, like you mentioned for Tomb Raider? It's a wonderfully manipulative, subtle sort of thing. You know, we're not pulling the heartstrings or telling people how to feel, but we're sort of composers, I mean, we're leading them down a general path of sort of you know, either building them up or breaking them down. It's always the push and pull. That's what I love about music, anyway.
Yeah, and it's the same with, you know, the rhythm of a game too, especially when the music works exactly with it. So you have these highs and lows and peaks and valleys, and
exactly,
yeah, it's amazing. You know, last year was such a busy year for you with all these scores. Is 2016 shaping up to be another busy year?
Most definitely. We Far Cry was a really big game for me, but also a big job. It was a lot of work. That was basically the last 4 months of last year. I was working on it, and then boom, it came out. It was very, very fast. And there's another one that I've done since then that is coming out sometime. Honestly, I can't remember when, but it couldn't be more different. I literally don't think I could think of anything more different than this next one, which, again, that's what's so wonderful about working in games. And then some more. Who knows when they're coming out? Some of them are coming out in 2018. Others are coming out a year and a half from now. It's always hard to say when a game is actually going to be released, because sometimes they don't even have a release date. Other times it ends up moving. But definitely lots of things planned in the future.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, Jason, it's just been such fun talking with you. I really appreciate your time, and good luck with your future projects.
Well, thank you very much, Kate.